Well, welcome. I'm curious, is there anyone here who knows how to worry? You know, we practiced this at the last meeting. How many of you know how to do that? Okay, pretty much I think everybody. It's a habit that we have. I don't know if you're aware of that, that we have a habit of projecting a negative into the unknown. It's just something that the mind does. It's something that we do when we worry. And what I want to do today is give you an opportunity to see how you can move from that negative to a positive. This is part of a series we're going to do. And everybody open your handout and look at what's worrying you now. Sometimes life is difficult. For those of you who may be watching the video and don't have the handouts, we'll have them available on our website, which is www.resource-i.com. So you can get the handouts and go along with us. I'd like you to take a moment to just kind of scan your life at work and at home. And take a moment to make a few notes. You've got a nice pen there that's been provided, and put it into the little box just to put down what some of the worries are. And this will help you in going through this process today to kind of grab some. And if you don't have any, then I would recommend that you worry about that. These are times of great change, not just in your company, but in the economy. How many of you had parents who had like one job, one career their whole life? How many of you changed your job at least once in your career? And how many of you think you might do it again? Now that's a big change in our lifetime. From our parents who had one job, one career basically their whole life, when they got a job with a large company, they were set for life. But that's no longer true anywhere. It's not like if you leave here and go somewhere else that you're going to have a security there. It's just part of the change. Now, I live in this place because I am self-employed, which means I'm permanently unemployed. I am always looking for work. I know what my expenses are from month to month, but I don't know what my income is going to be. So for about 20 years, I've lived with this fear of the unknown. In fact, for many years, I would get sick worrying about it, physically ill, worrying about how I'm going to pay my bills. I don't know, anyone else ever worry about that, you know, when you're paying your bills, if you're going to have the money to pay next month's bills and all that kind of stuff. And my wife used to get really upset about how I was handling things. She would criticize that the only time she got me was when I was asleep or sick. That I was just so consumed by the need to produce an income because I was so driven by the fear of not having enough money. I want to help you through that one as well as some others and give you some practical tools that will be generally valuable for you no matter what challenges come to you in your life. But it'll also lay a powerful foundation for the next step we're going to be taking in 2 weeks on turning worries into goals, because that's the thing that few people in the history of the world know. Take just a moment to share what you wrote down in that box with someone sitting next to you. It's important to let other people know sometimes what our worries are. See if there's any similarities between what you're worrying about and what they're worrying about. See if they're in the same ballpark of career or family or money or time or health. Good. Let me just take a quick survey. How many of you, these are the big five biggies. Say thank you to your partner. Thank you, partner. These are the five biggies. I want to see how many of you have a worry in one of these five stresses. Health, time, relationships, money, career. How many of you have worries that fit in? I kind of cover the ballpark. Good. So that's what we're going to be addressing today, is how to address, how to put something positive into those. It'll make a difference for you. But to do that, I want to take you through a couple of things. One, worry, if you haven't really thought of it before in the way that I'm going to communicate about it, is a signpost pointing in a direction you don't want to go. Now, when you're driving down a freeway and you see a sign pointing in a direction you do not want to go, do you turn and go that way? No, not at all, because you don't want to go that way. But in your mind, when you project a negative into the unknown, you go off and worry about it. Like that would be horrible if it had happened. If it happens, that's going to be bad. Now, just to back up and talk about the money issue for a moment, because a lot of us have this fear, at least like I did, about a time comes when I don't have any money. Let me ask you three facts, and you let me know what's true for you on these three facts. Because someone did this for me, and it made a profound difference. So let's see if it can help you. How many of you your whole life have had food to eat and usually too much? How many of you your whole life have always had clothes to wear, maybe not the latest fashion, but you always had clothes to wear? How many of you your whole life have had a place to sleep? Maybe sometimes like me, it was just your car, but you always had a place to sleep. So if you think about it, our basic needs have always been met. But we live with a terror of a fear of some time when that won't be the case. Even though not only has this thing we're afraid of never happened in our lives, but most of us don't even know anyone for whom it's happened. And yet we live with this terror. Seeing those facts made a big difference for me. What I started doing was just stepping over to the other side of the possibility. See, we're just dealing with fantasy here at the moment about what the future is. We're dealing with either a negative, horrible, terrible fantasy, and that's what we're worrying about, or we could be creating the positive opposite possibility and holding on to that. And the very fundamental level, when I write a check, I practice feeling grateful for the money I have to write the check, and I practice feeling grateful for the money I'm going to get that I don't know how I'm going to get it. Very powerful example. Let's see, this is 2000. A year ago in November, Amoco, who we'd been working with for a number of years, building from brown bag things to half-day things to one-day things to two-day things, their national curriculum director called us and said, "We really like your program, the two-day program. It's been aired now quarterly in Houston. We would like to offer it monthly at every site in the United States." You know, this is big time. You know, this is what you and my business really work to. And they said, "But more than that, we like working with you guys. And we've got 9 different communication courses taught by 7 different vendors, and frankly, some of them don't communicate very well. And we would like to have you take over all those courses, kind of take your material and their material and put together a 4-day course, and we would like that offered at every site in the United States." Phenomenal. You know, I'm imagining buying new cars. A week later, British Petroleum bought Amoco. Two weeks later, they fired all Amoco HR personnel and canceled all contracts. All of our first quarter of the year was scheduled with these programs. And now the whole first quarter was empty. And this was a frightening, terrifying thing. We went from the absolute best our business had ever been in 20 years to the absolute worst it had ever been in 20 years in about 2 weeks. We went from having more than we had imagined being able to do to not being able to survive and looking at, you know, the worst you could think of. Now, what I have learned that I want to begin laying the foundation for in your mind is that when you think about the future, no matter what you think about the future, it's a fantasy. And you can fantasize something negative or you can fantasize something positive. That's the choice. What I want you to know about yourself as a human being is that you have a habit of projecting a negative into the unknown. It's just what we do. I don't know why we do it. Maybe it's a protective thing. Maybe it's about, you know, learning how to look at the worst. And I'm not saying that that's a necessarily bad thing. I'm just saying that that's the way it is. The problem is, not knowing that that's what we're doing, we tend to hold on to that image. Like when we see that signpost pointing a direction we don't want to go, we tend to, in our mind, go off down that direction. Now, the bad thing about that is our body does not know the difference between what we vividly imagine in our mind and what's actual reality. So even though at that moment when we lost all that work. At that moment, it was not true that I could not pay my bills right then. I was looking into a future where I didn't know how I was going to be able to. And this is an important point that I want you to hold deeply. And I think I mentioned this to you before, but I want to emphasize it a little bit more. Henry Ford said, there are people who think they can, and there are people who think they can't, and they all think they're right. I've kind of personalized that to the thought, whether I think I can, or I think I can't, I'm right. And when we're worrying, are we thinking that we can or thinking that we can't? Can't. So all your stress that you'll ever experience is only going to happen when you're thinking that you can't handle whatever. Now, the reason we think we can't handle it, I think, is only because of one thing. Because at that moment, we don't know how. I mean, isn't it true if you know how, then you can think you can? And it's easy to think you can. I know how. And isn't it also true that we have a tendency to think that if I don't know how, then it would probably be irresponsible to think that I can? It wouldn't be honest. It wouldn't be true to say that I can when I don't know how. And so all that's left is to think that I can't. And then we go off with that as the reality, which is terrible. It's sickening. It's a horrible, horrible, achy feeling to know that there's a reality I have to deal with and I can't deal with it. That's some of the greatest pain and fear I think that we know. And it's all because at that moment we believe that we have to know how. That's not true. It is not true that you have to know how in order to believe that you can. In fact, the way to figure out the how is to consider that you can. It is very rare in life when a problem is presented that we already know how to handle it. There's a part of us that feels like as we project possible problems into the future, I may have to deal with this problem. I may have to deal with this problem. And at this moment today, I don't know how I would deal with it then. Then we get scared that we won't be able to deal with it then because we don't know how today. What you may begin to start to discover in your life is that you don't have to know the how now if you know the how then. We just have a fear that if I don't know it now, I probably won't know it then. But if I know it then, when I need to know it, I don't need to know it now. Did you get that? Now, what I've discovered is quite often what I need, the information I need in order to know how, is not available till then. I can't know now. In this process of getting from here to there, I can either experience that with, oh, I can't, I'm not going to be able to, and go through all the fantasies and upsets and frustrations of that, or I can imagine the possibility that I'll know how when I have to. Now, let's take this example of losing a big contract. What's the positive opposite possibility of losing a big contract? Now, notice what you said, getting another contract. All right. Let's make it better than that. What's better than getting another big contract to replace the one you lost? Okay. All right. Now notice what you're starting to do now. At first, all you did was kind of match the negative with kind of an equal positive. And I asked you to, well, consider it better. See, we had difficulty doing that, considering it being even better than it was, even if we got to stay with the good thing that was happening then. What's even better than getting a better, bigger contract? Say that again.
Getting the best contract.
Getting the best contract. Okay. Now, I want you to see you're starting to have a little difficulty projecting more positive stuff. It's kind of your mind kind of, So we all have that. We have a little bit of difficulty projecting more positive stuff because we've all been taught not to get our hopes up too high. How many of you were taught that when you're growing up? Don't get your hopes up too high, because what'll happen if you get your hopes up too high? You'll be disappointed. So most of us were taught to live life with kind of low hopes, so when the inevitable disappointment comes, we won't fall very far. See, I'm willing to live with extremely high hopes and expectations. I am willing to experience profound moments of disappointment, but not for very long. And what do you think the effect is on a person who thinks with low hopes versus a person who thinks with high hopes? Not on whether or not they're disappointed. Obviously, a person with high hopes is going to be more disappointed, perhaps. But what on what they're able to create. Little story about a person who was wanting a house, and as they were driving around looking for houses, they saw a house, and their first thought was, oh, that's just too expensive. I mean, it's a nice house, but it's obviously beyond my means. And so they, you know, drove on by. Another person who, by the way, had exactly the same income, came by and saw the house and went, that's the house! And got out and ran in and figured out, and yes, it was more than they expected, but they figured out how to make it. I mean, who more likely is going to create something? The person who thinks they can and thinks they can. You have a habit of going this way without knowing what the how is. I'd like you to begin the process of observing you doing that. I mean, I still have this habit. I mean, I was later here this morning than I had planned to be. I had a schedule in my mind. Other things came up I needed to deal with. I'm having anxiety. I'm having worry. I'm going, the automatic stress reaction, holding my breath, tensing my muscles, thinking self-doubt, thinking negative, getting serious. You all go through that? You always will. But you can learn to notice it and do the stress management response of breathe and relax and reassure yourself and thinking positive. You know, for me, it doesn't start till I get there, okay? So. And we had a very nice time this morning, and we got a lot of stuff done, and, you know, it worked perfectly. But how often do you project this, you know? So here's the next question I'd like you to ask here. What percentage of the things you worry about are not happening at the moment you worry about them?
100.
I think the answer is 100%, because if the thing is happening, do you have time to worry about it? No, you got to deal with it. So listen, if you're worrying, by definition, it's because you've got the time to worry. And that's how you have a habit of spending the time. And many of us have a habit of doing this. We've been taught that that's the serious, responsible, mature adult thing to do. You know, that's how they can tell that I'm a dedicated employee, is that I'm worried and upset most of the time. Right? And if I get so worried and upset that I get sick once in a while, that's even better, because then they really know I'm dedicated. But then I have to come to work when I'm sick just to prove how dedicated I am. Right? I certainly can't call in and say, hey, it's a beautiful day out, I'm feeling good, I'll see you tomorrow. But we will get sick, because we're so ethical, we actually do get sick. Feeling pretty bad. Probably contagious. I'll try to make it in tomorrow. If it is true that 100% of the things we worry about are not happening at the moment we're worrying about them, the next question is, what percent of the things that you worry about that are not happening at the moment you worry about them, what percent of the things you worry about never happen? Now, this depends on how accurate a worrier you are. But I think most people worry a majority of the time compared to what's actually happening. I'd say maybe 90, 95% of the things you worry about never happen, which means we're worrying 100% of the time about 5 or 10% of the stuff. Why don't we just worry 5 or 10% of the time? We wouldn't know which stuff to worry about. Oh, my gracious. I mean, we wouldn't want to have it actually happen and people not know we had worried about it. What might they think? We didn't care. We weren't responsible. all that stuff. What actually happened in regards to that change, we did get clear about our goal. The goal is to create something better than we had. We expanded the possibilities. We didn't want to just create new work for us as trainers and things, but we realized we had a limitation in our thinking, even in that success, that we had to sell our time in order to get paid. So we set a new goal, and that is to get paid without having to be there. Any of you have that goal? Now, I've not had that thought. That might be a new thought to you. For most of the time I was doing trainings at another corporation, in the other room was a program by Lou Tice. It's Adventures in Excellence. Lou was never there. It was a video-based training. I found out that Lou Tice got paid more for not being there than I got paid for being there. There's nothing wrong with having a salary. I think salary's nice. I like what it said on one of those late night real estate deals, that security is the ability to pay your expenses without using your salary. And they were trying to market you into, you know, getting into real estate. But the idea of having other sources of income than your salary, I think, is a positive one to consider. Because if your only source of income is your salary, no matter where you're working, who's in charge of how much you make? Someone else. So there's nothing wrong with a salary. I think that's great. But I would encourage you to begin the process of imagining how to create some more income. So I was a programmer before I got into psychology, and I've always wanted to do some things with the web and the internet and that kind of thing. And I just had in my mind that I had to go and create it, which takes a massive amount of time and money and everything. Then when I had the product finished, then I could go and present it to a client. A limitation in my thinking. I can't just ask them to hire me to go create it. I don't know how to do that. Once you become aware of these habits of thought that you have, and a good way to do it is to keep a journal, don't assume you're aware of what it is you're thinking. Freud's great insight is that there's a significant portion of each of us that's unconscious to us. There are ideas that we have we don't know we have. There's emotions we're having we don't know we're having. And if you keep a journal, you'll keep a record of your thought. Now, you're not going to see right then necessarily what you're writing. But when you come back in a week or a month and review it, I guarantee you, you're going to see things in your own handwriting that you didn't know you knew. And you'll start to discover some of these habits of negativity, of worry, of projecting this into the future. And you start to say, well, wait a minute. Why do I have to believe that? So I started discovering that I could believe that I could make money without having to be there. And I also believe that I could ask people to hire me to create it. And what happened is NASA did hire us to create web-based trainings on our stress management stuff. And it's up on our site now. It's on their site. And we own it. And we can sell it to other people. In 5 to 10 years, I expect most of my income will come from not being there. In fact, what has happened is we also have trainings in Europe now. Every summer, we have a week-long retreat in the Alps for about 150 people. Someone has to. We have more money than we ever had before. I don't have to make any income till May, and that's wonderful. Never had that before. In fact, the things that have happened in terms of creating more work with more companies, making more money, being there and not being there, is better than it would have been if we had kept those Amoco contracts. In fact, we could not have done the things we're doing now if we still had that. And even if we had had that, we would have been grateful and happy to be there, but we wouldn't be in as good a place as we are now, having lost them. And it's real hard to know, as you're going into that kind of dark tunnel, that that's the possibility coming out on the other end. For instance, I ask this a lot, I may have asked you before, but just to kind of get it on the tape, how many of you know someone who used to work here who doesn't work here anymore? Almost everybody, and wherever I go, that's the truth. How many of you know someone who used to work here who doesn't work here today, who is today homeless and living under a bridge? Nobody. How many of you know someone who used to work here who doesn't work here today, who today is making more money, having more fun? and you're waiting for? You think you're the lucky ones? Bottom of the page, on the first page, says stress occurs whenever I am unable to hold a positive image of success in my mind. It does not say that I know how to achieve the success. It just says that I'm able to imagine it. If you can't imagine, you can't achieve. And when you're worrying and when you're thinking about the negativity, it's real important to understand your body is going to be affected by that. When you're at the stoplight and you're feeling impatient and worried and upset about being at the stoplight, how much does your upset influence how long the light is red? Not at all. Not at all. I wonder how many other things in life that we get upset and frustrated about thinking that somehow it's going to have an effect. I mean, when we were babies, it did. I mean, how do babies let anyone know they need anything? How effective is this?
Very.
How quick is the response? How often do they do it? All the time. For how long will they do it? Until they get it, as long as it takes. Now that's you. Many times a day, for years, you used your emotion to influence the world to get your needs met. Now, you think you just stopped that because you got a bigger body? No. You didn't just stop that because you have a bigger body. Now, what I'd like you to do is turn the page. I'd like you to make a list of the symptoms, how you know that you are experiencing any stress, any upset, any frustration. Make as long a list as you can of the clues, symptoms, signals to how you know when you're experiencing any stress. The longer the list, the better. The more you can put it on, the better. Talk to your partner or someone next to you. See what they got on their list. If they think of something you hadn't thought of, put it on your list. Are you running? Okay. Say thank you to your partner. Okay. Now, tell me. What did you write down? Okay, we eat more. Now, eating is one of those things that can go in either direction. We can either eat too much or eat too little when we're under stress. Okay. Sleep. Sleep is one of those things, again, that can go either way. We can do what's called insomnia, sleep too much, sleep too little. Sex is another one. You know, you can get too much, get too little. I know if you're not getting enough, getting too much doesn't sound like a problem, but there is an addiction, just like to these other things. Too much, too little, we don't know. Okay, what else? How else? What? Okay, temper. Temper. Grind teeth, yes. That's true. Headaches. Where else aches? Headaches. Neck aches. How many of you get back aches? Stomach aches. What? Ankle aches. Well, that's true. I found that I was sitting in my chair with my feet up, wrapped around, and I didn't realize that. It's just my ankles were hurting all the time. It took me a while to figure out that this had something to do with that. I guess you know people had same kind of problem with pregnancy, figuring out how that worked at 1.2. So.
It was that last one you mentioned.
Okay. What else? Okay. Yeah. Oh, I see. Concentration, difficulty, your thinking. Concentration goes down. Anxiety goes up. Just tired. Exhausted. A lot of us are sleep deprived. We actually push ourselves later into the night to get some time by ourselves. And that's hard. What else? Okay, blood. What did you say? Oh, shopping, yes. Can be, especially if you're spending more than you have. So easy to do with credit cards. What else? Okay, yes, withdraw. Mm-hmm. Or you notice I'm kind of putting these into some categories here. This is not accidental. What are these categories? An emotion. This is behavior. These are your thoughts. And this is kind of your body. Now again, this is not accidental. What I want to emphasize is that this is hierarchical and causal. What that means is that it's kind of like a waterfall. What's up here influences what's next, influences, and there's this force that flows down through you. So how you think influences how you feel. You don't have an emotional reaction to something without having had a previous judgment about it. How else would you know? I mean, if there was a snake underneath your table right now. Because you have an opinion about snakes. I mean, now, if you grew up, you know, like watching Tarzan movies and that kind of stuff, oh, snakes, ah! But let's say you grew up in a circus and your family were the snake handlers. You know, and they got a picture of you in your crib with your little snakes, you know. And when you're about 5 years old, you've got your little boa constrictor wrapped around you, you know. You would just look and go, oh, you would look and see whether or not it was a hungry snake, you know. The perception has to occur first, except, here's the exception to this whole thing, if there's any chemical or neurological damage going on in your body, that can throw this all out of whack. Depression can occur over a long period of time of stress. It actually changes the chemistry of the body. I don't know if you're aware of that. I'll just give you a quick little insight into that, because a lot of people are unaware that in the brain you have nerves that come down and get real close to each other, but they don't actually touch. And in the space between the nerves is something called the synapse. They're little chemicals that are released by one nerve, the presynaptic nerve. It releases chemicals, endorphins and serotonin and that kind of thing, into the synapse. And so when the electrical charge comes down, these chemicals allow the electricity to be conducted over to the postsynaptic nerve, and things work fine. But when a person's depressed for a period of time, it tends to not have enough of the serotonin and norepinephrine in here. What an antidepressant does, you'd think, well, it just adds more of this stuff. No, it very elegantly stops the uptake. So the natural substance builds up enough to fire off. The analogy is when a person's depressed, it's like they're out in the ocean, they're over their head, and they're putting all their effort into breathing. You can only do that for a while. Then it does become life-threatening. An antidepressant is like a life preserver. You're still out in the ocean, you're still out over your head, but now you don't have to put so much effort into breathing. You still have to figure out where the shore is, which is what counseling's about. So sometimes stress gets so bad that there's actually chemical changes that happen in the body that require medicine to kind of template you back. Just, you know, willpower won't do it. Just, you know, just think positive won't do it. And I just see a lot of people putting up with stuff because they believe that somehow it's their character. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's like, you know, you got not enough serotonin and norepinephrine. You know, so if you can change that, please, you know, go ahead and do that real quick. Okay. Other than that, this is true. Something I call the levels of being. Turn your page. I have a little model of it there. And I want to emphasize a little bit more here. There are only two types of thoughts. Any guesses? Positive and negative. So you've got some positive thoughts and you got some negative thoughts. And what kind of emotion do you think your negative thoughts produce? Negative emotion. You don't get a positive emotion out of a negative thought. Your positive thoughts produce positive emotion. What kind of behaviors do you think your negative emotions produce? Negative behaviors. Positive emotions produce positive behaviors. Now, the body is one aspect of what I have there as called the results in life. You have results in a number of areas, in your body, in your career, in your possessions, in your relationships, in your finances. That's where the consequences of your creativity show up. Now, the problem is, what do we believe about all our thoughts? They're right. How many of your thoughts do you think you're right about? Even when you have negative thoughts, what do you think about them? They're right. In fact, the fact that they produce negative emotion just proves to us how right they are. Did you get that? The more upset we are, the more right we think we are. We actually use the intensity of our emotion as evidence to validate the truth of our thinking, which is, by the way, irrational. Because your emotion is a result of your thought, you cannot use that to validate the truth of the thought. That the negative thought produces a negative emotion has nothing to do with whether or not this negative thought is in fact true or not. Haven't you ever thought someone did something that you didn't like and you felt hurt and upset, and you may have gone through a lot of hurt and upset before you ever talked to them about it, and when you finally talked to them about it, you realize that you were mistaken, you misunderstood, you trusted what they then told you about what was real, and you went through that all that upset for basically nothing because you thought the thought that you had that required you to be upset was true when it wasn't. I want you to begin to be more curious about your emotion because it's always going to be a reflection of what's going on at the thought level, which is where the creative force is in your life. Thought, the truth is that thought is absolutely creative. This is a quote from Sandra Ray in a book called Loving Your Relationships. The truth is that thought is absolutely creative. The absolute truth is that thought is creative. Any thought you have that is in disagreement with this is a thought that you created, which just goes to prove that it's true. How we think influences how we feel, influences how we behave, and produces results in our life. This is what to focus on. If you're not liking the results in your life, I mean, think about it. All the horrible, frustrating, upsetting things that ever happened to you in your life, who was always there?
My husband.
We certainly want to make it someone else's responsibility, but who chose him? You know, I had this one client who was married 8 times. It was like a hobby or something. And she had this very interesting complaint. Her complaint was about all these 8 guys. Her complaint was they were all the same. And my reaction was, surprise, surprise, you know? Her thought was, you know, that's the way men are. Now, ladies, be honest. How many of you ever had that thought? That's the way men are. How many times a day? Now, be careful, because if you have that thought, like she had that thought, if a man came along who wasn't like that, she couldn't see it. And if she did, she couldn't believe it because it did not fit her fundamental belief. And the fact that each time she married one, it just proved to her that that's the way they are, and she was always more upset and hurt, didn't seem to make much difference. But once she realized that she was the thinker who thought the negative thought that produced these relationships, she could be the thinker who could think another way that could produce a different result. That's the process of beginning to shift what happens for you in your life. And challenges are going to come. Challenges we don't choose. They just occur in our lives. We choose how we respond to them. But not initially. Your initial reaction to everything, I think, is pretty well determined already. You probably cannot control your initial reaction to anything. Just a plop, plop, fizz, fizz kind of thing. What you can learn to do is choose your second thought. What you can learn to do is notice this habitual negative reaction and have an alternative to turn towards. So I've been practicing this stuff for 20 years before that Amoco thing happened. And in the past, I mean, I would have been blown out of the saddle. But I've learned to go, whoa, whoa, you know, breathe, relax, reassure myself, think positive. What's the positive opposite possibility of losing the contract, and what can we do? Now, here's the balance. Because it's not true that just because you imagine the positive that that's going to happen. But it's real hard for it to happen that you haven't imagined. Okay. But the balance is, okay, if this negative thing happens, if I do have to deal with this circumstance that I don't want to have to ever deal with, if that becomes the reality, it's not a fantasy anymore, it is here now. When that's true, am I willing to deal with it? Now, deal with it does not mean like to, want to, prefer to. Deal with it means I'm going to do what I can to be successful with this as the reality of my life. Now, I may have to make some changes. I may need to grow. I might need help in order to do those two things, to deal with this successfully. Am I willing to get the help I need when I'm not feeling that I'm dealing successfully with it? That's what dealing with it means. So if I'm willing to deal with it when it happens, I don't have to deal with it when it's not happening. But if I'm not willing to deal with it because, oh my God, I couldn't handle it, I couldn't survive it, oh my gracious, it'd be so horrible, I couldn't, then I have to deal with the possibility of it happening all the time, even if it never happens. What we'll do next time is help you discern the difference between fantasy and reality. It's not an easy thing. All your stress and worry is primarily going to be in your fantasies about reality, not about reality itself. Reality is actually a pretty safe place to be. Notice if your mind argued with me about that. What do y'all think about this? Does that make sense? So if you don't like how you're feeling, you may not know right now what to do about it, but I'd just like you to know that that's not necessary to know how in order to believe that you can. And again, you might need some help. That's what your employee assistance program is for. That's what counseling is for. I think everybody ought to be in counseling. You just don't know what it is you don't know, and that's what's going to get you. What you know that you don't know you know. That's, and this negative side of things is going to produce the stuff that hits you. Now, I think it's also important that you begin to think in a more positive direction down towards the bottom of the page. I want to make a comment about statistics, because a lot of times we think about what's possible for us in our life based on what we hear is possible for others. So we read in the paper or we hear on the television, you know, statistics about things, you know, like 40% of the people in this circumstance or with this challenge have this happen or have this happen. And what we do is we interpret that to mean that's what our chances are. You know, so let's say, I'm just making this up, I don't know what the statistics are. Let's say if people who lose a job, 80% get another job within 6 months to a year. I'm just making that up. Then we might think, well, my chances of not getting a job are 20%. Or my chance of getting a job is 80%. Well, what I want you to know very fundamentally is that statistics do not apply to the individual. What's true about a group has nothing to do with what's true about you. I mean, it could be 100% possibility I'm going to get a job in a month. But it's hard to know that in the moment that we don't know how that's going to happen. The best example I have of this is in my family. My dad had a job with a company for 30 years, and younger people came into the company, and he ended up working for a younger man and supervising a younger man. And the younger man that he worked with called my dad in one day and said, I'd like you to change jobs with the person you're supervising. And he'll have your job, and you'll have his job, and he'll now supervise you. Either that, or you can retire, whichever you'd like. So my dad had a frightening choice, because he was really 10 years from retirement, or a humiliating choice. He had been in the mindset of when you get a job, you keep a job. You don't change horses in the middle of the stream. Anybody heard that? You know, that was an irresponsible way of thinking in his generation. You got a job, you kept a job, and now it was a painful thing. I happened to be coming into town to teach a seminar on mastering emotions in the workplace. My dad had not ever attended a program of mine, And he came to this one. He was in a lot of emotion in his workplace. And he started talking because we came up with a definition in the course of what a perfect career is. Let me just give it to you in case you don't know. Definition of a perfect career is getting paid to do something that you love so much that you literally would pay to get to do it. So I don't know if you're in such a job that you would actually pay to come and do this. If you're not in such a job, the only reason you're not is because, frankly, you don't believe that it's possible to produce the results financially or whatever you want in your life and do that. In fact, many of us have been taught that work is, by definition, something we don't want to do, that we have to do in order to make money to go and pay for what we do want to do, which is called play and always cost. And you may have heard you're not supposed to get paid to play. Why? You know, I got in trouble all the time in school for talking. No teacher ever pulled me over and said, "Rob, you know you could get paid to do that?" No one ever pointed that out to me. I didn't know that. In fact, when I started speaking, it wasn't to make money, it was to market a counseling practice, and I was doing it for free because I had been taught unconsciously by the way my family behaved is that when you do what you enjoy to do, you do that for free. You volunteer yourself. And I remember the first time someone asked me how much I charged, I felt guilty. It didn't fit my belief system. It was uncomfortable. I remember very sheepishly saying, "Well, would $50 be too much?" I'd like you to know I've gotten over this. So we started talking with my dad because he shared with the group what was going on with him. And so I just asked, because I knew what the answer was, "What is it that you spend most of your money on to play?" Well, he spends a lot of money playing golf. Golf's kind of an expensive hobby. So let's switch it around to how do you get paid to play. So how do you get paid to play golf? Well, most people think, you know, being a tournament or be the pro stuff, but that's a very small portion of the golf industry are the people who are getting paid to do that. There's a multi-billion dollar industry around those people. What other ways could a person be involved in golf and get paid? Could teach golf? True. Work in the pro shop? All kinds of things. Write articles, travel around the country. There's a lot of ways that that's involved. So I then asked, okay, in your job that you've had for 30 years, was golf ever a part of your job? And he said, "Well, you know, I've been in purchasing for 10 years, and every once in a while a salesman takes us out, and we get to play golf kind of part of the deal." I said, "You're paid and they're paid?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "How often do you think that salesman gets paid to play golf?" He went, "Well, probably an awful lot." I said, "Have you ever thought about being a salesman?" And my dad very quickly said, "Oh, no, I'm a purchaser." Wonder how often an opportunity's come to you and you're, "Oh, no, I can't," for whatever reason. And he would have stayed right there, except I asked him a question. I said, "Well, who would make a better salesman than someone who'd been in purchasing for 10 years? And he went, "Well, but I wouldn't want to try to, you know, force anybody into buying anything. You know, I don't want to trick anybody. I don't want to have to sell anybody." Boom. I thought, well, you get to where your mind's good at flipping it to the positive opposite possibility. And I said, "Well, what if you don't actually have to sell anything to anybody? All you got to do is give something to somebody who already wants it." Well, he never thought of that as what sales could be. Giving something to somebody who already wanted it. So what he did is he let his network of 30 years know that he was available in sales, and another company picked him up in 2 weeks, paid him more money than he was making, matched his benefits. Written in his contract, because he showed me this, they had specifically stated that he could only be in the office 2 hours a week. Specifically stated, he could only be in the office 2 hours a week to pick up his mail. Guess what he had to do the rest of the week? Play golf. My dad played golf for 10 years, almost every day, got paid to do it, would take out his friends of 30 years. They hired him for his network of friends who worked for the companies that they worked for. And he would take them out to play golf and, you know, sometime during the game say, "Hey, you know, how's it going? You know, you know, need anything for me to communicate back?" And he retired then with two pensions. And now he meets with me about twice a year to talk about the stress of all the money that he's got and all the things he's going to be. Now, you've got lots of examples in your own life where that's happened for you. You may not have noticed it. You may not have seen it as an example of the pattern that I'm talking about. And therefore, when you come to those difficult, stressful, frustrating, upsetting times, you may not see the opportunity that's there. But it's always there to create that positive possibility and then to start putting action and moving in that direction, which I'm going to teach you more about next time. But the other side is to balance it with the willingness to deal with things in life. If you have to, but not if you don't. I mean, we could sit around and scare ourselves about all the things that would be horrible and terrible to have to deal with. You know, there's enough that's hard to deal with without adding to it stuff that you don't have to deal with right now. The fact that I may have to deal with it sometime in the future, well, hey, if it keeps coming up on your screen as a worry or a concern, maybe you need to come up with a plan, should you ever have to deal with that, to deal with that. And I'll show you how to do that when we get back next time, too. Learning how to do that in the graduate school lessons of life, you got to learn how to do it in the elementary school lessons of life, and that's what I've got on the next page. The five stress biggies, again, about health, time, relationships, money, and career. I want you to be looking through this as I go through it to focus on an area that's of importance to you and on one thing that you want to practice creating in that area. And then I'm going to take you through a process that few people do know, and that is how to actually create a habit. How many of you have given up on New Year's resolutions because, you know, you're not going to keep it anyway, so why even create the stress? How many of you know there's some things that would be good for you to do, but you've tried and it didn't work and you just kind of gave up on it? You know, like eating less or exercising more or any of that kind of stuff. It's because we have this this mistaken assumption that having the good intention is sufficient to produce the habit. That I want to should be enough. And when it isn't, then we don't know what else to do. You know, want to more, you know, and that just doesn't work. So I'm going to show you exactly how to create a habit, because that's how we build the foundation of a more powerful, positive life. But I want you to be looking at these, and what I've done is just come up with a few. I want you to come up with one for yourself that may or may not be on the page, something you know would be good for you to do. You may already know it before you even got here today, something that you know would be good for you to do in terms of your health. And that might be to exercise more, to drink more water, to relax more, to get a massage on some regular basis. Think about, see, there's a little line there at the bottom that you could add something in there that is something you know would be good for you to do. Or in terms of dealing with time, here's a little trick. If you have a feeling that you're not getting enough things done, what I'm going to say won't make any sense to you. In fact, it's going to be what's called counterintuitive. It just happens to be the truth. What you want to learn how to do is move 2% slower. Because when you've got more to do than you can get done, what do you tend to do? Increase your speed and move faster. And when you're moving faster, what's the bad thing that can happen when you're moving too fast? You make mistakes. Now, when you make mistakes, what have you done now to the amount of stuff you have to do? You've increased the amount of stuff you have to do, which does what to how you're moving? You have to move faster, which in, now you're moving faster. What, again, can happen bad? You make more stuff, and you get, that's what the treadmill is, moving fast, making mistakes, having more stuff to do, having to move faster, making more mistakes. If you just learn how to move 2% slower, and that's little things like putting your fork down in between bites and taking a breath with no food in your mouth. That's like standing at the elevator and pushing the button once. Unless these elevators are programmed to know which floor the button is being pushed the most on and go to that floor. 2% slower is just the attitude that I have the time. There's some research that says that 20% of our time is spent correcting our mistakes. If you go 2% slower, I believe you will reduce the number of mistakes you make 80%, which frees up 16% of your time for a 2% investment. You actually are going to get more time, besides have the experience of having time, by just being willing to walk a little slower, talk a little slower, eat a little slower, drive a little slower. All of that's going to be powerful in your ability to make less mistakes, catch them before you make them, and something called synchronicity will happen. The solution will just present itself. The how will occur at the moment that you need it. Someone will just hand you the answer. And my experience is, the more I go through life believing I have the time to do the things that I need to do, the more that happens. Now again, I still have the habit of that automatic stress reaction, tensing my breath, you know, holding my muscles tight, having self-doubt, thinking negative, getting serious, but not for as long. That's the goal. In relationships, doing some communication training, learning how to do what you want the other person to do, which is to listen in the middle of a disagreement. When we're working with other human beings, there are only two things that happen. We're either in agreement or we're in disagreement. Do we have any problem when we're in agreement? No, the only problem we have is when we're in disagreement. So get really good at learning how to deal with disagreement. Learn how to say thank you more often and I love you more often, hug more, pray more, all that's important.